Trendstorm.
Welcome back to Trendstorm. Now let's take a look at the Philippines' war on terror. Daesh, known mostly for its territorial conquest in the Mideast and terrorist attacks in the West, surprised the whole world by taking over a town in the southern Philippine island of Mindanao. Maute rebels attacked the city of Marawi last week, while President Duterte was on an important visit to Russia. And it's been reported that they're led by Isnilan Hapilon, the leader of the Abu Sayyaf extremist group, which previously pledged allegiance to Daesh. Furthermore, it's been said that the militants are also comprised of Malaysians and Indonesians as well, thereby raising the prospect that a regional jihad of sorts has been launched against the Philippines, just like how something similar was done against Syria throughout the course of its own war on terror. Philippine House of Representatives member Francisco Acedillo warned the world during the 2015 Shangri-La Dialogue in Singapore about what his country calls the Mindanao-Sulawesi Arc, which is the poorly protected tri-state maritime region between the Philippines, Malaysia, and Indonesia that he believed could be exploited by Daesh to establish a foothold in ASEAN. The far eastern Malaysian state of Sabah is no stranger to transnational threats such as illegal immigration and crime emanating from the Philippines' Sulu Archipelago, which is actually the headquarters of Daesh-affiliated Abu Sayyaf. While the Indonesian islands of Sulawesi and nearby North Maluku briefly exploded into religious violence at the turn of the century, it's not hard to imagine how easily Malaysian and Indonesian terrorists in Mindanao could take their battlefield experience back with them to these neighboring regions and sparking a ring of crises all around the Celebi Sea. That, however, is only if they succeed in making it out of Marawi alive, which is something that the no-nonsense Duterte is doing his utmost to prevent. Not only did he declare martial law over the entire island, but he ordered the military to go all out in their anti-terrorist operations to snuff out this threat once and for all. In addition, he also proposed an innovative battlefield solution, whereby local Maoist and Islamist rebels could join forces with the military in collectively fighting terrorism, something which could potentially work out to their political benefit after the conflict is over. This fresh approach seeks to kill three birds with one stone: deter moderate rebels from defecting to Daesh, defeat terrorism, and work towards clinching a deal to end all pre-existing insurgencies.
Trendstorm.
All right, folks, well, for this section of Trendstorm, we're joined exclusively for the entire segment by Mr. Adam Gary. He's the managing editor at the Duran, and he's been on top of this story since it first started. All right, Adam, well, what's happening in the Philippines right now reminds a lot of people about the war on Syria. President Duterte's foreign policy, just like President Assad's, is too independent for the West's liking, and both leaders were consequently demonized right before the terrorist-driven destabilization of their countries began. What's your take on these comparisons?
Well, there are a lot of important similarities, and there's more or less an equal amount of important differences. The similarities are obviously a popular leader. In the case of Duterte, he was recently elected. In the case of Assad, he first was elected in the year 2000. But we both got situations where an ISIS-driven insurgency is trying to conquer parts of the country, destabilize the government. The differences really come into it in respect of the fact that in Syria, there's a stated goal to overthrow the government, the central government in Damascus, where in Philippines, it's more of a regional struggle, but it's one that could easily balloon into something wider. It all goes back to a traditional Islamic insurgency, if we can call it that, in the southern Philippines, particularly on the island of Mindanao. It was there that various groups over the last decade have waged an on-and-off insurgent-style war against Philippines, agitating for self-government, sometimes for independence and political autonomy. In 2014, the most prominent of these groups engaged in a ceasefire with the central government in Manila, but other fighters that were dissatisfied with that ceasefire continued the insurgency. Now, it's only been in recent months where these various insurgents who haven't laid down their arms have pledged gradual allegiance to ISIS. Now that the remaining militants have all coalesced into a formal part of this so-called Islamic State, Daesh, ISIS, call it what you will, they've launched an all-out war of conquest, conquering entire cities. There's been video footage and photos shown of the slaughtering of Christians, of other random civilians, heavy damage to infrastructure. And of course, President Duterte, the leader of the Philippines, has declared martial law in the region where ISIS are present and has vowed to crush them with the same authority which he went after the vile drug smugglers and dealers in Philippines since becoming president. Of course, before he was president, he was the mayor of Davao, where he exercised a similar tough law and order stance against the narcotics trade, which in Philippines represents something very different than some Western listeners might think. It represents ultra-violence. It represents the most violent kinds of organized crime and, if we can call it that, disorganized crime, the kind of random street violence that terrorizes the old, the young, just about everything in their path. Finally, I'd like to say that Duterte's war on drugs and his new war on ISIS are in fact inexorably linked. Recent reports have come out showing that the Afghan poppy trade alone, which is obviously cultivated into heroin, has earned ISIS over $1 billion, and that's from Afghanistan alone. Other reports have shown that ISIS are now engaging in the narcotics trade in parts of Europe, including in Albania, the occupied Serbian province of Kosovo, and they even have been reported to have been engaging in making contacts with the narcotics trade in Latin America. So ISIS is now, in many ways, the world's most big and dangerous drug smuggling cartel. And so Duterte's war, it's a two-pronged war. He needs to go after the drug dealers and the drug buyers who are funding ISIS and operating as their main source of revenue. And he, of course, also needs to go after the fighters themselves who are ravaging a part of his country in the same way that these same kinds of people have done in Syria, in Iraq, in Libya, and elsewhere.
Trendstorm.
All right, folks, well, for this section of Trendstorm, we're joined exclusively for the entire segment by Mr. Adam Gary. He's the managing editor at The Duran, and he's been on top of this story since it first started. All right, well, we also see how President Duterte wants to join forces with moderate Moro and Maoist rebels to collectively fight terrorism, which is a lot like what President Assad has started to do through part of his country's amnesty program and ceasefires. There have been challenges and limitations when it comes to implementing the strategy in Syria, of course, but how successful do you think it could be in the Philippines?
I think it could be more successful in the Philippines for several reasons. In Syria, there is no such thing as a moderate rebel. There are members of the Syrian parliament who are not members of the Arab Socialist Baath Party, the party of President Assad, and they, of course, support the government's war on terrorism. They disagree with the government on some other local matters, just as any opposition party in a normal country would. In terms of these terrorist groups, the Western media has at various times called everyone from the Turkish-backed jihadist group Free Syrian Army to the Al-Qaeda offshoot Al-Nusra and its various other names that it adopts, depending on whose cameras it's in front of. They call these people moderate rebels, and they're certainly not. Assad, though, has continually taken a moderate line, offering amnesty to jihadists who are surrounded. He gives them the opportunity to lay down their weapons, be evacuated from the point of battle. They are allowed to continue leading a civilian life if they so wish to do. In Philippines, it's slightly different because there's at least the potential for actual moderate rebels who have had traditional disputes with the central government to form in a sort of broad coalition with the Philippine army against a common threat. And this, as you detailed, this includes Maoist fighters who have had a kind of insurgency against the government for decades, and also these Moro Islamic fighting groups, including some who were engaged in the ceasefire in 2014. So there's an opportunity, if these groups take Duterte up on his offer, to actually form a genuine coalition of government forces and moderate rebels who are willing to set aside their disagreements with the government and join in this coalition. By contrast, in Syria, there was no fight to begin with. It was a foreign fight. And there is obviously a danger that foreign fighters and supplies might be coming into Philippines via the sea. Philippines, in this sense, does have one big advantage again over Syria. This is a naval blockade where in Syria, foreign fighters, often posing as Syrians, were allowed to flow in through the hostile borders with Turkey, the porous ISIS-controlled borders with much of Iraq, the hostile borders of Jordan, Jordan being a big U.S. ally and long-time opponent of Baathist Syria. Of course, you have Israel, which is illegally occupying part of western Syria, the Golan Heights, and you have a Lebanese border just to the north of the Israeli border, which is corruptible, to put it mildly. So those are some of the key differences with who and how these so-called moderate rebels are able to enter the equation.
All right, Adam, well, the last thing I want to talk to you about today is the U.S. I mean, you know, the U.S. has military bases in the Philippines, but it hasn't gotten involved in the battle for Marawi, nor has it been invited to. We also know that President Duterte has been coy about the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Act that his predecessor signed in formalizing his presence. So, do you think he might seek to revise the agreement in light of Daesh's attack on his country? Or could the U.S. seek to exploit this turn of events to retain its presence there?
What's incredibly interesting to see what's going on, long before this very recent ISIS formal declaration and engagement in a war of conquest, Philippines under Duterte was moving further and further from its post-colonial ally, some would say master, of the United States. He engaged in a historic rapprochement with China. He was in Moscow meeting with President Putin at the time that the ISIS attack consolidated. So it's clear that he wants help from Russia in terms of weapons. I think that one cannot discount the idea that China might enter into the conflict, not least because there could be a kind of quid pro quo wherein if Philippines supports China's claims in the South China Sea, they could return the favor by using their navy, which is, of course, the finest in the region, to help with the naval blockade that could essentially box ISIS in and make sure that no supplies can reach them, let alone other jihadist fighters from local countries, whether it be Indonesia or Malaysia. The United States has remained silent in Philippines, and that silence is eerily similar to the kind of silence that they're engaged in over Egypt. Egypt, which is a U.S. ally as well, is now bombing Libya to target jihadist fighters that have come into Egypt. They've caused multiple atrocities, not least the recent slaughter of Coptic Orthodox Christians. And America's silent on that and silent on the Philippines. So we have a weird scenario with two traditional allies of America, and in one case, a country that has a heavy historic and present U.S. military presence, and they're just not saying or doing anything. Yet they're going into Syria illegally, according to international law. They're doing things that are generally counterproductive, where they could be doing something productive in Egypt and Philippines, but they're not. Duterte is an interesting one insofar as he has a very good personal relationship with Trump. They've established one through various phone calls, the contents of which have been leaked. He famously hated Obama, and I won't repeat some of the things that he said about him, but needless to say, they were not the words of friendship. But I don't think that yet anyway, this personal friendship that he's developed with Trump is going to in any way change the fact that Philippines, under Duterte, sees China and also Russia as important strategic partners. And I think rather than change that thinking, the current war against ISIS terrorism has only enforced Duterte's original foreign policy shift.
All right, Adam, as usual, this is very comprehensive and very characteristic of the way that you write your articles. You went really in-depth, and I'm very happy that you can explain all this to our audience. Thanks again for coming on to Trendstorm.
Trendstorm.
So, folks, if we think back on what Adam had to share with us today, there are many, many strong parallels between what's happening in Syria and what is now unfolding in the Philippines. But at the same time, there are also many differences between them, which make it out to be that the Philippines could potentially avoid the fate which has troubled Syria over the past 6 years. And part of the reason for this is because of the geography. Because Mindanao is an island, as Adam said, it could be cordoned off. Potentially, maybe even with Chinese naval assistance, we'll have to see. But either way, we need to keep our eyes on the situation. Daesh has definitely expanded into the Philippines. It is very dangerous. There is a high risk of a regional confrontation because of this. Daesh could seep into eastern Malaysia and eastern Indonesia. But at the same time, we do have Mr. Duterte fighting against them, and we know he's going to do whatever it takes, just like President Assad does, to stop this menace once and for all. So, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@spoonikanews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.